Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paul Barkish.
I like this kind of party.
The Score senior football expert.
Once you put all the evidence that we have together, that's the bottom line.
Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media, and Westwood One.
It goes deep. Hub does too.
Analyzing the Bears and the NFL.
This was an ongoing conversation at Hallis Hall for literally a couple months.
Hub Arkish with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Let's talk some football with Hub Arkish. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hub is on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. He is the man behind Pro Football Weekly. He's with us now. Hello, Hub.
Yeah, how you doing?
We're good. Now, since we last talked, the Bears have completed the construction of their offensive staff. They have a passing game coordinator. They have a nominal offensive coordinator. They have a promoted and seemingly empowered quarterbacks coach. And they haven't named a run game coordinator. It kind of tells us all we need to know about the Matt Nagy, the way he looks at football, doesn't it?
Well, I know that's what we assume. I you know, the reports are out there that one of the reasons for the changes is that Helfrich and Hiestand were responsible for being the run game coordinators, but we never knew that either. Don't know that that's accurate or not. Juan Castillo, the new offensive line coach hire, has had that title on a few occasions. So, you know, it may be that that's an unannounced title. I think the only reason that Dave Ragone has the title of passing game coordinator is because John DeFilippo became available. Nagy wasn't going to pass on him. He didn't have an opening for him, so he had to create a situation. I think it's going to be really interesting. We've got the same, I don't want to call it confusion, but uncertainty now about who's doing what, because you have, as you say, a nominal offensive coordinator, one who's not really empowered, and basically two quarterback coaches now in DeFilippo and Ragone. So we'll see how this all works out.
What makes DeFilippo such a great quarterbacks coach, and yet, you know, the next step up for him has been a little iffy in the league?
Well, you know, Connor, it's a great question, and it is like everything else with the Bears coaches, it comes with some uncertainty, because I don't know that the next step up has been that iffy. He had the 1 year in Minnesota, and Kirk Cousins had one of the best seasons of his career, other than the usual big game brain farts, and that's not on the coach, really. And what happened there is it's not that he wouldn't run the ball. It's that Mike Zimmer wanted to run the ball 75-80% of the time. It was a bad fit. He was fired. But then he goes down to Jacksonville, and if you think about it, you know, works miracles with Gardner Minshew. You got a 6th-round draft pick that he coaches to all of the all-time Jacksonville, you know, single-season passing records. And the official, you know, report there is that they mutually agreed to part ways. And we know that prior to that, there was the clear firing of Tom Coughlin, the retention of a couple other coaches. You know, so you just don't know what was going on in the mix in terms of management and authority there. At the end of the day, because he has been as transient as he has, you know, we can assume that there's something that hasn't been a great fit, but he has had pretty good success, you know, working in this RPO offense and getting quarterbacks to perform well in it.
Yeah, I'm like you say, figuring out how they work together, both in game and in the week, is fascinating to me. I mean, are they literally all in a room together? And during games, who has Nagy's ear? I think that's going to matter, because we don't know what those internal communications are like.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, I watched Mark Helfrich come to the podium every Thursday for 2 years as the offensive coordinator, and kind of wonder why. You know, I mean, because we knew he wasn't calling plays. Was he instrumental in the game plan? You know, did they divide the run game and the pass game? We know about the huge whiteboard, the all-wall whiteboard in Matt Nagy's offense where he draws up plays. You know, it's a little less clear than it is in most coaching situations around the league, how this staff is you know, what authorization each has to do what and what responsibilities they have.
Not for nothing. We had the college football national championship just a little while ago, and now there's news out with Joe Burrow's dad saying he's got no problem going to Cincinnati. Is everything? I mean, we're a little early on in that process, but the number one pick seems to be the number one pick. Is that kind of how you understand it right now?
I think so. I just am not sure it's Cincinnati. I mean, listen, he's from Ohio. There'd be a real issue if he had a problem going to Cincinnati. You know, you always want to come with the idea, if you're the number one overall pick, that you're good enough that you can turn a franchise around. If you don't believe that, or if you think the franchise is that, impossible to work with, you're going to create some doubts in the minds of other organizations as well. So I don't think there's anything else to say. What intrigues me is that the Miami Dolphins worked awfully hard to be in this position with three picks in the first round, and trading down with the Dolphins for the Bengals and possibly still getting Tua. And guys, there are evaluators out there who will tell you that if Tua comes back 100% from the hip surgery, that he may still be the better of the two prospects. Nothing negative on Burrow. I mean, he had an incredible year, has done everything you could want. Watching him last Monday night, I don't see how he isn't a good quarterback at the next level. But I think it's got to be Burrow because of the hip surgery for Tua. But whether it's the Bengals or not remains to be seen. You've also got the Raiders sitting out there with a couple of first-round picks. And John Gruden, for whatever reason, refuses to commit to Derek Carr. You know, so there's just a couple teams with the ammunition to make a deal. And if I'm Cincinnati and I look at that roster, if Miami was interested, I don't even hesitate if I'm the Bengals. I take those three first-rounders, maybe get a two next year, and I go, you know, and probably still get Tua. So we'll see how that all shakes out.
One of the best things I read yesterday was a column by the talented Michael Rosenberg of Sports Illustrated. And it was about Odell Beckham Jr., and it was just looking at the fact that he cannot keep from doing dumb, avoidable things. And he said it's not like he's got felonies on his rap sheet. He said it's the equivalent of just a long list of misdemeanors. Nobody has a nose for stupid minor trouble like this guy, as if he craves it. What's his deal?
Well, I think you just described a trait that we find pretty common in narcissists. And again, I don't want to pretend to be a mental health expert, but you look at players who've been like that, and it often works back towards narcissism. I don't think we're going to go for BDP. Brandon Marshall tried to turn his issues into borderline personality disorder. This is the classic syndrome. These guys, some of them anyway, pampered from grade school. You know, always the best athlete, always knew where they were going, let their athleticism get in the way of their education. You know, whether it's just immaturity and lack of development, or it's actually some different ways of viewing the world, you know, we really don't know. But and why so many of them are wide receivers, we don't really know either. You know, that is not a minor coincidence. I mean, the divas at that position are just unbelievable. And I'd love to do a study and come up with some answers on why that is. But at the end of the day, and I'm going to say probably the first thing I've said in defense of OBJ in the last however many years, I think charging him with assault for slapping a cop on the rear end is a bit extreme and a bit unnecessary. But never should have. What he was doing was distracting from the kids who deserved the attention and bringing it on himself by being in that situation at all. The interesting analogy for me is watching that game. Randy Moss was where he belonged, up in the stands, not even in great seats, with other parents celebrating his kid. And you never saw him. I didn't see him after the game, in the celebration in any way. And here you got OBJ, who will never attain I shouldn't say he will never. He's got the ability to do it, but certainly is not on a path to the Hall of Fame. And yet he's got to be front and center and getting the camera on himself instead of the kids who deserved it. The whole thing was just really unfortunate.
We're going to take some phone calls with Hub Arkish in the second segment, 312-644-6767. You want to talk to the editor of Pro Football Weekly. Hub, Kansas City's offensive performance this year has been pretty impressive, even with Patrick Mahomes injured and banged up for a little, the number of games that he had been. It was unbelievable to watch the comeback that they had against the Texans. Eric Bieniemy is the offensive coordinator there. Andy Reid's got a great track record of getting his coaches their next head coaching gigs. Is this a situation where Bieniemy is just getting, the short end of the stick because his team's still playing? I have to imagine that he is a legitimate top-tier candidate for almost any team.
Well, he has to be. I mean, you know, just objectively and realistically, he's accomplished more in that position than Matt Nagy did, and we saw how quickly Nagy got his job. And again, I don't want to start the local debate as to whether that's a good or a bad thing, but in his first year, he wins Coach of the Year, so we can't say that Nagy was elevated too quickly. And yet here sits Eric Bieniemy. I do think that part of it is that he's still working. Remember, the Chiefs lost a wild card round first week with Matt, and he was free to go right away. You know, here they're in the AFC title game now for the second year in a row, which adds, you know, 2 weeks on of best case difficult to get the right interviews and be in the right place and be considered. I do think he will get his shot because he's obviously good. And I think it's probably more circumstance or fluke than anything else, although, you know, a couple of group interviews, never done a one-on-one with him. I can't say I know the man well. You know, part of the issue is how they interview. And it's interesting, we're talking about this because of the obvious minority hiring issue in the National Football League, and it is serious and it needs to be dealt with. But it, in my estimation, Eric Bieniemy has not been punished nearly as much as Dave Tobe, who should have been a head coach 5 years ago. And so the point is, there are guys like this who as qualified as they seem to be, they don't get the jobs for some reason. And so the unanswered question, the elephant in the room, is in the case of Bieniemy, is it because of race, or is it just that he's one of those guys?
You surprised to see Ben McAdoo being interviewed, and I saw the name Mike McCoy popped up again. It was a name I hadn't heard in a while.
Mike
who was
McCoy,
pretty hot
right.
name. There was a time when that was, and I was thinking John Fox was going to bring him in here to run the Bears offense, and I guess you just stick around long enough, your phone rings.
Well, I think these guys are talented. Is the part that people forget, you know? Now the Mike McCoy experience is different from the Ben McAdoo experience. Ben McAdoo got a head coaching job, failed badly at it, is always the case with these issues. I think, you know, in large part his own fault, but not completely his own fault. He is still a young coach by those standards and a talented offensive mind, you know, and with the focus, I think there's a sea change going on in the NFL right now. I don't think this whole physical defense running game thing is temporary, but it's still offense. And so with the continued, you know, spotlight on offense around the National Football League, whichever one you're going to play, guys like McCoy and you know, Ben McAdoo are going to at least be considered again because they're bright guys.
First game of the weekend are the Titans and the Chiefs. How do you see it happening?
Yeah. I'm trying to find a way to predict the upset this week.
Yeah.
And I think the Titans, you know, have certainly shown that they've got the tools and the pieces to do it. But the big difference between these guys, between the Chiefs and the Patriots and the Ravens, the Patriots, you know, in hindsight, it shouldn't have been that big an upset. It was because of the Patriots' legacy and history and the fact that they were at home. But that team just hadn't played well. They were 4-4 down the stretch. Titans were just the better team. Going into Baltimore, I suspect Baltimore would beat them 7, maybe 8 times out of 10, but they had the magic formula. They got up a couple touchdowns on them, and that's a problem for that team. That's how they lost all 3 games this year, you know, and so, you know, that was the answer there. So you look at the high-powered Chiefs offense, and you say to yourself, well, what's the formula? You know, you play ball control, you run the football, you keep Mahomes on the sidelines. Problem with that is that if you were watching last week, the Kansas City Chiefs scored 3 touchdowns in 3 minutes. So, you know, they don't need time of possession. They're a different style offense than the Baltimore Ravens. They are more explosive. They're not reliant on a ground game that chews up clock. And so I think the Titans can go out and play their very best game and probably still get beat here. Now, I know they did beat the Chiefs just 4 or 5 weeks ago in a high-scoring game. It was 35-32. This defense for the Chiefs has gotten better each week over the last 5, 6, 7 weeks. A big key is Chris Jones. I don't think people realize how important he is. In many respects, he's the Akeem Hicks for Bears fans of the Kansas City Chiefs defense. Andy Reid was not optimistic about his ability to go early in the week, said with, you know, groin and leg injuries, trying to push off on a defensive lineman is really difficult. Then we hear he did practice yesterday. Now, how much he didn't practice, we don't really know. If Chris Jones goes, then I just don't see any chance for the Titans. And even if he doesn't, I still see the Chiefs outscoring them and probably by more than the touchdown, which I guess is what everybody wants to know.
And how are your thoughts crystallizing about the other game?
Well, you know, this one's easier. I came away from Lambeau last Sunday realizing the Packers were better than I've given them credit for. Now, part of that is because they did have their best offensive game of the season. And when Aaron Jones got taken away, don't be fooled, you know, by the two touchdowns or the 23-yard run. On 21 carries, Seattle, which is not very good against the run, held them to 2.9 yards a pop. If San Francisco does that, then the Packers' offense isn't going anywhere, which is what happened, you know, when they went out there 6, 7, 8 weeks ago. I just think that that front of the San Francisco defense is so dominant right now that I'm not sure anybody's going to beat them. Now, if we get a Chiefs and 49ers Super Bowl, you got the classic strength against strength, so we'll have plenty of time to break that down. But in this one, you can't compare the Packers' offense to where the Chiefs are at right now. Aaron Rodgers showed us last Sunday he can still make the plays. He can still be the difference. He is still absolutely one of the best in the game. But the 49ers are just a better team. They get a nod in every matchup. I did the preview for the papers this week, and you know, we go offense, defense, special teams, and coach, and you give an edge in each one, and usually it's 2-2, maybe 3-1. 49ers get the edge in every category, and in some of them they're not close, and I don't know that the Packers are going to be able to keep this game close.
All right, you ready for some phone calls, Hub? We're going to do that next segment. Good. So let's load them up. 312-644-6767. It's you and Hub next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Talking football with Hub Arkish, the bottom of the hour, brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves host the Rockford Ice Hogs at 3 p.m. Sunday. It'll be Superhero Day at Allstate Arena. Show up in superhero gear. Take pictures with your favorite superheroes. The callers are lined up for Hub. We'll start with Frank in Oak Park on The Score. Frank, go.
Hub, my favorite Deion Sanders quote, which he might have stolen from Shannon Sharp, is that the NFL is less a league of X's and O's and more one of Willies and Joes. In recent weeks, the Bears have terminated a number of their offensive X and O guys. But if the Bears front office doesn't make several strategic talent injections on offense this year, the new coaches will join their predecessors next winter, packing their personal effects into a small box and being escorted by security out of Hellas Hall. Hub, your staff is working on the 2020 grad draft guide, and I'm not going to ask about individual names because I know the juniors are still declaring, but I heard Jim Miller thinks this draft will have an overabundance of good offensive linemen. For the sake of coach job security, what are the chances of a real outlier happening and the Bears can find an immediate starting left tackle and starting wide tight end with those two second-round picks this spring?
Well, Frank, you know, it wouldn't be the strangest thing that ever happened. There is definitely some real talent at the offensive tackle position. How many of them are left tackles versus right tackles? Not certain yet. We're told that the top-end talent is about 5 to 7 tackles deep, and if one of those guys were to fall to 43, it's just too early to say. And if one does, there's a reason that that's the one that falls to 43. You know, historically, after quarterback and maybe pass rusher, there's no position like left tackle that you have to look as closely in the top 10, top 15 of the draft. So I think there's a chance they can get better, but we're working on the assumption that Ryan Pace and Josh Lucas and Matt Nagy agree with you and I, and of course I've been outspoken about this for 3 years now. I didn't understand why Charles Leno got the contract extension in the first place, and I've watched him over the last 3 seasons, and I don't see what they see there. But the fact that they see it and have made no move to give him any competition doesn't mean that they're going to do it this year either. Everybody knows you got to find a tight end if you're the Bears. And unfortunately, it is not a great year for tight ends. There's going to be some good football players, coming out, Bryce Hopkins of Purdue. But, Kmet's a first rounder. I'm not even sure Hopkins, we're not sure where he's going to fall yet. There are some who think that 43 or 50 could be a little rich for him. And there's some other kids that we're going to be talking about. So the answer is, it can happen. But we got to get a lot more information before we know if the Bears are thinking the same way we are.
John in Shorewood, you're next on the Score with Hub.
Hi, guys. Hub, even with an all-time great quarterback, it's really difficult to win a Super Bowl. And I've heard many in the football industry kind of knock Mike McCarthy because he only won one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. Do you think that's silly or unfair?
Yeah, I think it's extremely silly and grossly unfair because Aaron Rodgers never had the quality supporting cast around him that other, multiple ring quarterbacks have had. All too often, Aaron Rodgers was the reason that the Packers were even competitive. Usually had, a pretty good group of receivers, a star, and then a good number two and number three. They've been very good at offensive tackle in the Bakhtiari and Bulaga era. But they haven't had much at tight end for a while. The interior of the offensive line is shaky, and the defense has been mediocre. When's the last time the Packers had a top 10 defense? They're not close to that this year, even though, the Smith brothers are doing a nice job rushing the passer. So I think the fact that they were as good as they were under McCarthy and Rodgers is to their credit, not that it should be discredited for not winning another ring. Now, how much of it McCarthy, how much of it Rodgers? That's where Packer fans get into the great debate. I think the answer is probably somewhere in the middle.
Next up is Greg from Griffith on Sports Radio 670. Greg, you there?
Greg. Come on, Greg.
Greg is not there.
Come on, Greg.
It is Frank in Lakeview. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, my question is about Jeff Burrows, and I've only seen him play for 2.5 games, and I'm certainly aware of the statistical records and how just crazy they are. My observations of him, though, is that he might not possibly – he's going to be a good pro football player, but my observation is that he's not going to be a great quarterback in the pros. And the reason I see that in my question is it seems to me that a lot of his passes depend upon the receiver coming back for the ball or having good separation. And that what he doesn't do, that Trevor Lawrence does, for instance, and a host offense type thing, is that he rarely is able to put the ball in front of the receivers where the receivers can catch it and then go for additional yards. And in fact, he often puts the ball either slightly behind or right at the receiver, and the receiver is not able to catch the ball in stride and then go for those, long extra yards. Have you seen that?
No, Frank, I haven't.
Is he this? Really, you heard about this?
Obviously we're not going to rate a guy based on 2 or 2.5 games if we're talking about a first-round draft pick, but B, I'm assuming one of your 2.5 games wasn't the championship game last Monday night because, he dropped a couple dimes that were unbelievable, and he's been doing it all year long. And you have to understand that in today's football, not just the NFL or college, but in football in general, the end-all, be-all is not hitting a wide receiver in stride who has separation and having him go 70 or 80 yards. The contested ball and the back shoulder throw are being taught every bit as much as trying to hit a guy in stride deep, and in fact, more often, because these athletes are so good, you don't get a lot of wide receivers that are running free down the field. It's just about putting the ball out in front of them. So the concern about Joe Burrow is going to be 1 year and what happened before he got to LSU and why did it take this long. Is it going to be enough to keep him out of the top five in the draft? No. Is it enough to maybe keep him from being number one? When you have a Chase Young, when you have a Tua, once we get into the workouts and the medicals, you don't know. But there's no way Joe Burrow is falling further than 3 or 4 in the draft. And right now I'd say he's almost certainly number one.
The best part of that was he gave us our first ever Jeff Burrows for Joe Burrow.
I was going to ignore it, but
we can't. No. We're contractually obligated.
1974 NL MVP?
Jeff Burrows?
I believe he he was the name on my very first glove My first Rawlings glove was a Jeff Burrows model.
Sure, but that was B-U-R-R-O-U-G-H-S, correct?
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
1974.
No, my glove was awesome. He was the MVP. Screw you.
1974 with the Rangers, 301-397-504, Jeff Burrows.
And he was rocking the big horn-rimmed glasses. And
damn right
he
was.
The 70s hair going and everything. No, perhaps he wasn't all that good at baseball. But he wasn't. But he was good enough for me. One more for Hub. It is Mark on the South Side on Sports Radio 670.
Hub, good afternoon. I was very happy to see that Jimbo Covert made the Hall of Fame. I thought he was quite deserving. But what's your take on Randy Gratishire? I mean, I remember him way back in his college days.
73
MVP. He's got 7 Pro Bowls. Was there some negative about him?
Well, Mark, let me just say about Jim, and I don't know if this has been said enough, it couldn't be happier for him, not only because he deserves to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame for what he did on the field, he's one of those guys who is even a better person off the field, and I'm saying better than a Hall of Famer on the field. He's really a special guy and couldn't be happier for him. You have to understand why it took this long. It was the shortness of the career, and that's not fair because it was shortened by back problems. But that is an issue, you know, when you get to the Hall. Now, as far as a Randy Gratishire...
That's a great question about Randy Gratishire, who was an awesome player.
Yeah. Well, and you know, this is what troubles me, is that there are other awesome players out there who may still be waiting, who maybe even didn't make this list, and yet Harold Carmichael is going to Canton, not because he's a Hall of Fame receiver, but because he was 6'8 and a Hall of Fame receiver. And again, Harold Carmichael was a great football player, but look at some of the other receivers who aren't in. You know, guys, I'm bothered by this whole situation and process, and I'm torn because I'm thrilled that it got Jim Covert his just deserves. But if you think about it, why is the league doing this? I mean, this is a different selection panel than the normal one. This is a 25-member blue ribbon panel as opposed to their 48-member panel that picks all the other Hall of Famers. Every one of these guys is eligible because they were passed over by the Hall's normal process. And so what are they saying? Are they saying our process isn't good enough? Our selection committee isn't good enough? To me, this creates a whole lot of questions in my mind as to what the Hall of Fame is doing. Now, that said, it's interesting. I'm not upset about it. I do think the NFL's Hall of Fame process is as good or better selection than anybody else's, definitely better than baseball's, where you have a bunch of people completely unqualified who are voting on these guys. And so in that regard, I don't want to diminish anything that happened here. But if you think about it, this is just a marketing shtick when all is said and done. And I'm just glad that Jim Covert was one of the guys who got the benefit. I mean, how is Bill Cowher more of a Hall of Fame coach than Dan Reeves or Tom Flores? He has one ring. They have two each. I think their winning percentages are very similar, and yet he jumps those two. Well, the reason is obvious, because the Hall got to go on network TV and anoint Cowher, who's in your living room every week. So, you know, we're always going to get into these Hall of Fame conversations. But this process, this decision that there needed to be a special class and it needed to be picked differently by different people than the ones who normally do it, I think it raises a lot of questions that the league should be, that the hall is separate from the league. It's owned by the league, I believe, but not run by the same people. I think they need to answer some of these questions.
Hub, thanks as always. Have a great weekend.
All right, take care, guys.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.